This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what's the whole deck with galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds. For whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Welcome to my podcast, where we are going to talk about a lifestyle with dogs and throw in a few life lessons along the way. Whether you're a hound hunter, bird dog enthusiast, running setters, pointers, retrievers, or a flat-out running dog junkie, this podcast is for you. I am your host, Heath Hyatt, a certified law enforcement canine trainer with over 3 decades of personal and professional training and handling experience. It's time for me to pay it forward. So grab your leads, lace up those boots, and come and join me on this lifelong process of teaching, training, and learning. Are you looking to unlock your dog's full potential and give them the best nutrition possible for peak performance? Then look no further. A Nookshook has what you're looking for. Anookshook's nutrient-dense formulas are crafted to keep your dog's energy high and performance top-notch. Packed with premium proteins and essential fats, Anookshook delivers the balanced nutrition your dog needs to thrive. From hunting dogs to police canines, Anookshook is trusted by professionals. Give your dog the power of peak performance with Anookshook Professional Dog Food.
Because I tell you one thing about Toby. That guy, I've had, I don't know, maybe 30, 40 people at my camp over the years, and he hunted there 3 weeks this year, and even the last day of the season, he got up and he came down to camp, he came downstairs to breakfast, and he was 100% positive. He goes, it's a great day, and he says, I'm going to kill an elk today. And you don't see that in most people. Usually after 3 or 4 days of seeing nothing, most people, they lose their perspective. They get negative. They're like, oh, there's no elk, and they just get negative. And I've seen
Did Barry get him a certificate for the positive attitude?
He did. Barry gave him like 12 new certificates.
he earned one every day, didn't he?
Every day. He earned a certificate every day. Yeah.
Oh, man. Well.
Welcome back to another episode of What's Up Wednesday. We'll kind of skip through all the formal introductions. You guys know the drill. But on this episode, we're going to catch up with Mr. Rick Labby, who graciously invited me out to his camp in Wyoming to elk hunt. And you've heard my version of what took place. So today, we're going to hear his version. Before we get started, a couple questions come up out of the last two podcasts. I've been asked a couple times about how did I get the meat back to Virginia? Well, again, everything worked out very well on this trip. I had a buddy that actually drove out the day that I flew back home, and we had made arrangements for me to take the elk to a processing plant where he was going to be staying. So I took the elk there. It was about 2.5 hour drive, kind of out of the way, but it worked out. Got it processed, and when he drove back home, he brought my elk with me, and I just met him back at my dad's and picked the elk up. And since then, we've had a cookout with elk burgers with the hunting group. They were phenomenal, and we actually had elk steaks last night, and I can't tell you that I couldn't be more happy to have it. The second thing that you guys don't know, in the second podcast, you can hear an elk bugling where I have placed it in where that took place. That is actually the elk that I shot. Rick was able to catch that on his camera, and we got it transformed over to audio, and I plugged it in where the elk was bugling at. So that is actually the elk that I was hunting. That was not a auto fill-in or anything like that. It was our elk. So those couple things that maybe you didn't know. And we will get you to the podcast right now. Enjoy.
Rick, I mean, I can't explain what a great experience
time for
it
you.
Was.
Yeah.
And, you know, how humbled I am that you guys had me out, not knowing me, and let me stay at your camp, you know, stay in the bunkhouse, and just how.
I feel like I'm a really good judge of people. And the first time I met you and talked to you and did the podcast with you, I got done, and I usually talk to Nancy about, you know, she goes, how'd that go? How'd you like that guy? And I go, you know what? He's the type of guy that I think I could go hunt with every single day, and we'd be best friends for the rest of our life.
I said, that's how I feel.
Yeah. I said, he's just one of those guys that, I said, I just feel like we're brothers from a different mother. You know, I say that a lot, you know, because I meet these guys in life and I feel like we could be brothers from a different mother. You know what I mean? Like the way we think, the way we hunt, the way we. Yeah, so, and it was 100% spot on. You and I hunted together one day and you did everything I would do right with me, and you killed a big elk. You know, it was just perfect. So,
well, I had your guidance. So, I know that day we were sitting there, and we're getting all over the place. We're going down rabbit holes, but we're just going to have a great conversation. But without your guidance, I wouldn't have known those things because I'm illiterate when it comes to elk.
No, right, right.
Like, I know nothing.
Yeah. So you're a lot like me. Like, the first time I meet somebody, I don't care where if I'm hunting some new species, like let's say I'm going mountain lion hunting and I'm mountain lion hunting, which I have, I've shot some big lions, but I can remember the first time I went mountain lion hunting and I hunted with this guy, and I'd never mountain lion hunted before, but I'd hunted bobcats my whole life, and it's pretty similar. But it's similar, but it's different, right? You're in a different climate, you're in different altitude, different dogs, different people, everything. And I pay attention to the person I'm hunting with 110% because I want to learn everything that this guy knows, right? And I'm trying to steal his brain, right? And I felt that way with you that day. I said, he's locked on to everything. I could tell. I said, this guy's going to do everything I tell him to do. And I said, if it all comes together, he's going to kill this elk. I could just tell that morning. I said, and then when you killed that elk, your reaction and just
I'm still smiling, man. Like, I can't wipe it off my face because he was like, that's a good shot. That's a good shot. And I'm like,
yeah, I knew it was a good shot.
Did I not hit him? And he was like, you hit him.
Yeah, so, I could tell, man. Yeah, so let's talk about it. Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Well, let's back up. So I want to tell you something that I didn't tell you. So when I drew a tag and I text you and you're like, holy cow, you drew on the first draw.
That's,
and I'm like, okay, all this is going to take place. And then, you know, we get up into May and you were busy and we were kind of going back and forth. And I'm like, what if this dude don't want me in his place? I don't know what. I'm just going to have to go out there and like learn this on my own. So I was
hang
a little
out,
bit
right,
scared.
Right.
Yeah, I was
what
like,
if
I
this
was
guy,
a little
what
scared.
If this guy don't like me?
Yeah. So right. I'm like, oh, so I talked to Rodney and I'm like, Rodney, he's like, well, he's like, I don't know the area. He said, but we'll figure it out. And then, you know, you and I talked and you're like, no, you know, come, we're going to fly out on this day and we'll be there. And I started feeling better. Like, okay. And then, you know, I show up that day and you and Toby's out and Nancy and Barry are sitting at the kitchen table. When I pull in and I can see them sitting there and right. I'm like, in my mind, I think they're probably wondering, who is this cat? Like, who's this right. dude pulling in? And then Nancy comes out on the porch and she's like, oh, are you Heath? And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, oh, come in. And Barry was sitting there and he's like, you want a sandwich? And I'm like, yeah, I'll never turn down food. So Nancy fixes us a sandwich and we sit there and chit-chat.
Barry is about the most likable guy you'll ever meet in your life.
Yes. Like, you know, spending those couple days with him.
But he'll rate you, right? He'll talk to you and then he'll tell you what he thinks you need to do or what's wrong.
Yeah.
Then he'll give you a badge.
No, I didn't get any certificates. I'm a little disappointed. Barry could at least give me one for effort or something. Right.
I'll have to tell him that when I see him.
Yeah. So, you know, you and Toby come in after lunch and Barry, I mean, I've got my hands full of hamburgers because I'm grinding for Barry and Nancy's packing it in a vacuum seal. And I don't know, Barry was cutting steaks or something. And you're like, hey, we'll get situated here and we'll go. And
yeah, I forget about that. You showed up and the first thing they did is they put you to work cutting elk meat and packaging and cutting steaks.
That's all right. Hey, right? I'm your place. I'm there. Whatever you need me to do, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, so. Yeah. You were a trooper, man.
So, yeah, we go up. We're watching that one. I don't know. What do you call that out there? We was watching that one ridge.
Yeah, Aspen Butte.
Yeah.
I think it was Aspen Butte, that ridge up behind camp that night, right?
Yeah, and we get up there, and you give me your long-range gun, and I'm like, well, I've never shot this, and I'm not sure, but we sit down, and as soon as we get situated, it starts hailing, and you and I are laughing about it.
I figured I could talk you through it.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, we had a good time, man. We really did. And so I had to laugh, so we got down to the kitchen. And looked at me and said, so what's the game plan for tomorrow? And I said, well, we're going to hike up this mountain. I said, we're going to side by side in there like 10, 12 miles. And we're going to hike up that mountain and we're going to find a big bull and we're going to kill him. And you were like, okay. And so next morning we get, I don't know, 4:30 AM and a couple hours before daylight and you were already in. I could see the anticipation in your face and everything. And So we headed up in there and we got side by side in, and it was still dark out. We started hiking up, and it was me and you and Toby. Toby went with us.
Mm-hmm. And
I had run Toby pretty hard the day before. I walked him probably 13 or 14 miles that day, and the sweat was rolling off that poor guy all day long. And we started walking up in there, and we get up in about maybe half a mile, and you looked at me and you said, I just heard a grunt or a bugle up in that canyon, Rick. And I know that canyon well, and there's always a bull in there. And I looked at you and I said, are you sure? You said, yeah, I'm sure. I'm positive. I heard a bugle right up there. So I said, well, I know where he is. I said, there's a wallow up there.
Yeah.
That I guarantee you that's that big bull I've been after. And he came down to that wallow last night, and it just getting daylight. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we split up from Toby, and Toby says, yeah, I'm going to hike up about 2 or 3 miles up here. And cause we had chased one the day before up there, and that's where he was headed. I said, all right, me and Heath are going to towards this canyon and go after that bull. So we hiked up in there, and I was watching you the whole way because, I mean, the elevation never bothered me my whole life. I can hike at 10,000 feet and do, you know, 15, 18 miles a day. Doesn't faze me at all. I've been a tracker my whole life, and I love the mountains, and I can hike like nobody's business. So I was kind of feeling you out, seeing if you could keep up with me or not. And I looked back, and you were right behind me all morning. I said, wow, this guy's got some lungs on him. He's in shape. He's pretty good. So, and for the first day in Wyoming at 10,000 feet, that's uncommon, because most guys take some 2 or 3 days, Heath, to get acclimated to the elevation.
Well, you go and tell a story, because that's one part where I was like, let me catch my breath.
So, and I'm not very patient. I usually when there's a big game animal bugling or whatever, and I know he's there, I'm focused, and I tend to drag the guy who's with me pretty hard behind me. So we get up there, and there was that one small meadow, and I knew that wallow was off to my right about 200 yards up in the woods. And I had said to you, I said, all right. I said, if he answers, I said, and we were whispering at the time, and I said, yeah. You're right. And I said, if he answers, I said, I want you to almost run across that meadow. There was a meadow probably 200 yards across it. And that's the only meadow down in that basin right there in that little canyon. And I said, I want you to move right across that and get into the woods and split the difference. And I said, I'm going to stay back here and bugle. And I said, we'll call him in. And you said, okay. So I let a bugle out. And you had those little hearing aids in. And, man, that bull bugled back at us, and he just ripped one right off. And you could tell, I could tell by his voice of that elk that he was the big one that we were after. I looked at you, and I said, that's him. I said,
he was like, go!
Go, get up there. Yeah. So you took off, and you got to the other end of that meadow, and you went in the woods a little bit out of sight. And I bugled at him again, and he bugled again, and he was closer. So I was pretty sure you were going to shoot him.
I seen him.
Yeah, you saw him. I didn't know it at the time, but you saw him. And we messed with him for a good 30 minutes, right?
Right there?
Yeah. And mm-hmm. and he wouldn't come in, and he wouldn't close the distance. And I... Of course, I didn't hear a shot out of you. I didn't hear you shoot. I'm thinking, damn, we're going to lose this bull pretty quick, because we'd been like 30 minutes messing with him. And he'd go over to our right, and the wind was blowing from left to right. And what that bull was doing is he was trying to catch your wind. So he was coming down, trying to cut your wind downhill. But that meadow was there, and the way the wind was coming, he would have had to come into that meadow to actually catch your wind. So he kept going back and forth. And so I moved further away from you. I actually moved back behind where I was standing, probably 150 yards, like I was moving away, leaving, trying to pull him down the mountain. And I said, that'll pull him in, and Heath will get a shot at him. So I'd call cow call, and I had three different cow calls around my neck, and I tried to break it up so it sounded like two or three different cows together, because that usually gets a big old smart bull going pretty good, and it kind of tricks them. And then I'd let a grunt out just now and then with my bugle. I'd just grunt. I never bugled. I'd grunt. And, man, he'd rip a bugle back. I bet he bugled at you and me, what do you think, 25 times?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I seen him come off the ridge, but I got him behind that boulder and messed myself up because yep. I wasn't 100% sure how close I should have went. And then when he cut behind that boulder, that's when he bugled the second and the third time.
Yeah.
And I seen him walking from parallel, but it was so thick I couldn't get a shot. And then he went in behind the next boulder. And that's when you come and got me. He was like, he was waving your hand. He's like, come on, come on. And
yeah.
That way, so we circle back through that meadow.
Yeah. It got to the point he kept coming back and forth. And then all of a sudden he started moving up the ridge.
Mm-hmm.
And I've hunted elk for, I don't know, 20 something years. And, I probably bugled in, I don't know, way over 100 bulls and messed with a lot of them over those 20 years, just nonstop. And I thought to myself, I said, he's almost done. He's almost done with us. He's almost made his mind up that we're not a cow, and he's about ready to leave. And that's when I came to you, and I got close enough, and I waved you. I said, come on, let's go. I said, we got to go after this bull now because he's not coming mm-hmm. in. And I dragged you up the side of that mountain and we got up there and you could see all the tracks. We get up there about probably 100, 125 yards. And there was four or five sets of tracks where he had been running back and forth. And you could see it was all torn up. And he went over those rocks. Remember that big rock mm-hmm. ledge? He went yep. over those rocks and it was all tore up where he'd been going back and forth. And so I stood there a while and I didn't really know where he was. And you were literally 5 feet behind me. And I'm trying to think, okay, he was down here to our right the last. And I'm looking at all the tracks and I'm thinking, where's this bull? And I couldn't smell him. And then all of a sudden he let that grunt out and he was about 1 o'clock from where we were standing. 12 o'clock was here, and he was about 1 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at you, and I said, let's go. I said, don't make a sound. And you didn't make a sound. You stepped in my footsteps, and we snuck up through that bunch of blowdowns
mm-hmm.
and timber, and just, it was a mess.
You told me, you said, for a big boy, he said, you was awful quiet in those woods.
Yeah, you did good. You did really good. And we snuck up through there, I don't know, a couple hundred yards. And mm-hmm. I had my binoculars right here. And every step I was scanning all that hard, all that timber. And it was just blowdowns and spruce and timber up through there. And it was almost straight uphill. And I took one last step and I looked and I could see a little bit of blonde. And I think he was, I would guess, 200 yards, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it was give or take, yep.
Yeah, 200 yards, give or take. And I could see a little blonde look to my left, and I could see one antler tip sticking up. And I turned around at you, and I said, he's right there. And you basically looked right at my finger where I was pointing, and you went, I see him. And there, and there was a blowdown, and you mm-hmm. put the gun on that blowdown, and I remember this clearly. You knelt down, and I'm looking through my binoculars, and I saw you go. I saw you get down, and you were like ready to shoot, and all of a sudden you stood up and went, took a deep breath, and you went back down, and boom, you shot.
Yeah.
So you weren't ready.
You were telling me. I was like, I told you, I was like, Rick, I don't like the shot. And you were like, take the shot. And I'm like,
take the shot. I said it.
Small window. And you were like, take the shot. I was like, yeah. Okay. So I had, you know, I talked about it in my podcast. Like, I thought I was going to be eat up with buck fever. You know, I thought I was going to be like, couldn't get my heart rate down. My heart rate was good.
Happened too quick.
I had to come off that barrel just for a second and catch. I did my tactical breathing. I was like,
yep, you did. Yeah.
I went back down on it, squeezed the trigger, and boom, that was that.
Yeah. And I had my binos. I had my binos focused on that elk. And when you fired, I saw him hunch about a foot. He just buckled and then he jumped. And, you know, being a hunter my whole entire life and shooting so much game, I knew he was hit hard. I could just tell. I said, he made a great shot. And I looked at you and I said, you got him. And we stood there for a few minutes and I think we moved ahead about 10 feet. And then I saw him in the binoculars. He was down. I could see his rack sticking up. And that's when I looked at you. I said, you got him. He's down. And man, the expression in your face, you were just like, oh, you know, and yeah,
it was a relief because I was so worried I was going to mess that up.
Yeah. We worked our way up there and that elk actually from where I saw him to where we found him, he went about another 50 yards before he died. He got back up again, went 50 yards, but yeah, heck of a bull, man. What a bull.
Yeah. To say I was kind of speechless, I was, because all this stuff is happening. You know, I'm going to say the last 42 years in perspective, because that's when I got my first gun when I was 10.
Hunt of a lifetime.
Like, yeah, I'm like, this is like a dream. Like, I've been dreaming of this for years.
Yeah.
And it was like, bam, here it is in your face, and now it's over. And it's like, it's hard to explain. Like I said, like I said, you can't explain.
You just can't explain to people that haven't done it, the emotions of the buildup and the hunt. And I mean, we spent 45 minutes bugling and back and forth and messing with that bull. And when it all just finally happened and you shot him and killed him, and then we realized he was on the ground dead. It was just like, all the emotions, you know, came together. Yeah.
No, and I mean, like I said, I was, you know, when we got up to him and I was taking my backpack and everything off and I sit down on the rock and, like, I'm just, what's going through my mind is like, you know, I didn't screw this up. Like, I got an opportunity and I was able to cash in. Like, I did, it worked. It happened.
Yeah. Oh, man. And for me, you know, I've hunted elk. I bought my cabin out in Wyoming in about 15 years ago, and I'd started hunting elk about 6 years before that in Colorado. First place I ever hunted was Colorado, and first time I ever hunted elk, I killed a big bull, an 8x9, and he wasn't a giant 8x9. He was like a 280-inch 8x9, but it was just the whole experience to me. I was hooked on elk hunting from that day on. I knew when I killed that first elk, I said, there'll never be a year that I can't go elk hunt the rest of my life. And I just love elk. And then I bought a place in Wyoming, had my own cabin out there. It was like a lifelong dream to me. And, you know, from the time I was a kid, when I was 5 years old, I had a horse. Well, when you're 5 years old, you don't know anything, right? You don't know anything. And my parents bought me a horse and all that, and I had a horse. And then my parents ended up getting divorced, and my horse went away. And I grew up, you know, my whole life wanting to be a cowboy. You know, that's all I dreamed about. I wanted to have a horse, and I wanted to be a cowboy. And my grandmother came from Texas, and a little bit of history. My great-great-great-great-grandfather was Quanah Parker, who was a Comanche Indian chief in Texas, and horses his whole entire life. So, and you don't realize till you get older that this is in my blood. This is who I am. And so when I started going to Wyoming and I started renting horses and doing my own backpack trips, and I just loved it. It was one of the most inspiring things in my life. And to this day, I love horses. I love doing the horse thing. And I love hunting elk. I love being in the mountains, all that. It's hard to explain to people that haven't done it, but you know, it's who I am. And the whole deal. And to have somebody like you come out and kill an elk with me, and the first, you and I did a podcast together. The first time we ever met, you messaged me and said, "Hey, I'd like to do a podcast with you." And I just felt like from the time you and I met and we talked, and like I said earlier, we got off the podcast. My wife said, "How'd that go?" And I go, that guy's like a brother from a different mother. I said, he's a hound hunter. And I said, he's just a great guy. And I said, I invited him to Wyoming and told him to put in for a tag. And I never thought you'd get drawn for 5 years. You get drawn the first year.
I know. You know? I hope I get drawn every year now. Like you roined me. I told you standing on the mountain that day, I said, you roined me. Like this is is awesome. And I'll never forget that area.
No.
I'll never forget that ridge.
And you'll never forget that the rest of your life, guaranteed. No.
And you know, we only walked 6.6 miles that day.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't horrible. You know, we went down and brought the horses back, and I guess we could talk about that a little bit. So we didn't walk that far, and everybody said, you know, everybody's asking about, well, the pack out and this and that. Like, you know, you and I were talking, like, Rick, I don't know how y'all quarter them things up and get them out by yourself. Like, in my mind, I'm like, yeah, we'll take them down and we'll go up and down. It won't be no big deal.
Yeah.
But after the second trip.
Right. I called my neighbor, Anthony, and you were like, well, we'll just pack this elk out. You know, no problem. Now, we're on top of a mountain. We're literally a mile straight up.
Yeah.
You know, 1,000 feet straight up in a mile. And you're like, yeah, we'll just pack this out ourselves. I don't think we really need a horse. I'm looking at you like, yeah, you'll change your mind after one trip.
Mm-hmm. And
so I called Anthony. I said, hey, Anthony, I said, we just killed an elk. I said, would you come pack it out for me? He goes, oh, hell yeah, I'll come pack that out for you. And he's my neighbor in Wyoming. And we'll talk about his daughter, Jordan.
Daughter, Jordan, yeah. Because Jordan come with him.
Jordan came with him, right.
And
already a hunter, already knows how to shoot a muzzleloader, knows how to load it all on her own, 14 years old. Mm-hmm. I tell you right now, I was impressed. Very impressed.
So she was, when you told her, since I had got mine, that you would take her later in the week or that weekend, like she was excited. Like she come down to the cabin and you asked her, right? And this was before I left, because I was like, that's going to be interesting. You said, do you want to take one of my guns? And she was like, no. She's like, I'll just take my 50 cal. And you're like, your muzzleloader. And she goes, yeah. She goes, I've never really shot a rifle, so I feel a little comfortable with my muzzleloader. And I'm like, all right, girl, that's going to be tough, but okay. That's what I was thinking.
That's what I was thinking all week. Yep. So they come up and pack the elk down. And so we gave you the head and the hide.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that head and hide probably weighed 100 pounds. I figured he had the whole head.
Yes.
And all the hide rolled up, you know, and I took a good 3/4 of that elk hide. Now, I don't know how many people have ever packed out an entire elk head with a hide, but it's easily 100 pounds. So we got it rolled up and onto a pack and tied. And Heath, you got down. There was a big rock there, and we got the elk head on the rock. And we got the horns on your shoulders. And I'm like, you all good? And he goes, oh, yeah, no problem. And you get up and you're like, whoa. this is a pretty good load.
It took me a long time. It took me way longer to get off that mountain than it did y'all.
Yeah. So we had the rest of that bull on the horses, and we're packing the horses down, and about every about every 300 yards, I said, how you doing, Heath? He'd be like, yeah, I'm doing all right. And
thank goodness it was all downhill.
We got all the way down to the bottom, and I didn't see you anymore. You disappeared. You were lagging behind. Yeah. So
y'all left me. That's right.
We got down to the four wheel, and we got all the elk unloaded. And about 10 minutes later, Heath come walking. He's coming down the trail, and I got the video. We'll have it on YouTube there. But anyway, he's coming along, and I says, what do you think about making three or four more trips to pack that elk out? And you're like, man, I'm glad you got them horses here.
Yeah, that was a great decision on your behalf to not listen to me.
I've done it before. So anyway, we got your elk out and everything and got it all back to camp. And that was a heck of a day. And so Jordan called me up and she said, hey, Rick, she goes, that invite to take me hunting still good? And I said, yeah, of course, Jordan. I said, I'd love to take you hunting because I was tagged out. You were tagged out. And I said, I'll take you hunting anytime you want to go. So I picked her up the next morning, and she had a 50 caliber Hawkins muzzleloader, one of the old kit rifles. And I actually have one of them. Let me grab it. Just a minute. I want to show you.
Yep.
Okay. So this is my grandfather gave me this. This is the exact muzzleloader, octagon barrel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is what she was carrying. Right? It's got a set trigger on it.
Lock. Yeah.
And got the old percussion cap. Right? So that's what she carried. She showed up with that. And
it was snowing.
It snowed all day.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't even know how many bucks that I've missed over my lifetime with them damn muzzleloaders where it didn't go off.
Mm-hmm.
You listen to some of my podcasts over the years, and you hear me say I could fill a dump truck with the bucks I've missed where the muzzleloader didn't go off, where I've walked up to them and literally bucks laying in their beds and it would go.
Mm-hmm.
Go. So I'm thinking, well, if she gets to see an elk, you know, then I've done my job, because probably that muzzleloader is not going to go off. She's 14 years old. She's carrying that old percussion cap muzzleloader, octagon barrel. And I said, if she gets to see one, because she told me, she goes, yeah, I've been hunting elk for 3 years with my dad. She goes, I've never seen an elk, Rick. I said, I'll show you an elk today. I guarantee it. Because on snow, you know, we could find a herd and follow them and track that herd. And I was pretty confident. So first day we went, we come on to a big herd of elk, and we followed them for probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 miles. And we come on to that herd, and a cow jumped up in front of us, and then the bull went back there, and she got to see him, and she was very, she'd never walked behind anybody before, so she was very conscientious about putting a cap on. So she never put a cap on her muzzleloader because she was behind me and she was afraid it might walk. And she'd been taught well, okay? And I told her, I said, Jordan, after that whole incident happened and that cow ran off, she probably wouldn't have got a shot at it anyway, but I said, you really need to have a cap on your muzzleloader. And she said, well, she goes, walking behind you, she goes, I'm really worried about it going off. And I said, no, I said, you're fine. I said, put a cap on it. And I said, you've got a set trigger on that, a double trigger, right? And I said, you put it at half cock. I said, it's never going to go off, ever. I said, you got to cock that thing all the way. Then you got to hit the set trigger, then the regular trigger. So I said, you're fine. Put a cap on it. and you'll be good. So then, so that day she saw that cow and that bull, and she was pretty excited. And we went back to camp that night, and like a day, a whole day went by, and I hunted with Toby the next day, and Toby, we tracked a bull all day, and I pushed Toby pretty hard that day, and there was a bull bugling in front of us, and we tried to catch him, and we caught up to him, and we were crawling under a big blowdown, giant blowdown, and it was the only way around it, and this bull just bugled like 100 yards from us right in the timber, and just as Toby come up from under the blowdown, he looked up, and there was a cow standing right there looking at us, and I was looking at the cow and looking at him, and I said, there's a bull right there. And just as I said that, the cow jumped and the bull come just basically kind of trotting by, and he jumped up and he shot right over the bull. So didn't get any hair or anything off him. And when he fired, he said, he goes, I know I shot over him. He goes, I was too much out of breath. I wasn't ready. And he goes, I shot over him. So we went back to camp that night, and Toby's like, nah, I'm going to hunt on my own tomorrow. He goes, you know, we went a long ways the day before, and he goes, you pushed me pretty hard. And he said, I'm just going to go on my own, take it easy. I said, all right. So Jordan's dad called me that night, and he goes, Jordan's been pestering me about hunting with you again, Rick. I go, yeah, we'll go again tomorrow. And he says, okay, she'll be ready. So I said, all right, I'll pick her up at daylight. So I picked her up, and Jordan went up. She had a 50 caliber Hawkins, and we tracked this herd. We get onto this herd in the morning, and we tracked this herd probably 5 miles that morning. And it was around, it gets light out west about 7 a.m. And it was around noontime, and we come to this giant meadow. We were way up high there, about 10,000 feet. And I looked at Jordan. I said, Jordan, do you want to stay on this herd, or do you want to kind of take this meadow and loop around back towards the trailhead, and we can work our way back towards the side-by-side? And I said, we'll still keep hunting, but I said, we won't keep pushing on this herd because they were headed to the wilderness. She goes, yeah. I could tell she was tired. She goes, yeah, Rick, I'd kind of like to take the meadow and work our way back and just hunt our way back. She goes, I'm getting kind of tired. I said, okay. And we literally went 100 yards out into this meadow, and I come up over this hill, and I looked at the tree line, and there was this big cow with her head down, big cow elk with her head down feeding. And I said, Jordan, I said, there's a big cow standing right there. And that kid, 14 years old, she just took a stance, pulled that muzzleloader to her shoulder, cocked it, and pow, just like that. And that elk went down like a ton of bricks, like a bag of sand. And I was like, wow, you got him. The gun went off, and I said, you got him. And then I see that elk. What she did, she spined that elk, hit him in the spine. Mm. And she made a great shot, but she was a little high and spined him. I said, reload. And you'll see on the video, there's a video going to come out on my YouTube channel. And she reloads that muzzleloader all by herself. Never had one bit of help from me. 14 years old. Put the powder in. Put the lead in. Rammed it down. And I said, Jordan, I said, that elk's wounded pretty good. I said, try to get closer and make a good shot. And she got within 50 yards and poked one right through the lungs. Boom. Shot him again. I got it all on video. And that elk tipped over and died right there. Mm. And that kid was so happy. I mean, it was more fun for me to see her shoot that elk than it would have been if I'd shot that elk myself. You know, that's what it's all about. Teaching a kid and getting the inspiration of that kid out there and actually make everything happen and making a kid see that it can happen and they could do it. And then I let her skin that elk. She helped me skin it, gut it, everything. So she got quite an experience that morning.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I say her following you around for 2 days. I can't imagine the information and the knowledge that she, if she paid attention, what she took.
She did pay attention. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm sure that her now seeing elk probably going to multiply.
Yeah, I'm sure. I think back, you know, I think back to when I was a kid and, you know, I never really had any hardcore hunters in my family. I was the hardcore hunter in my family, and I learned most of it on my own. And I learned all of it on my own. And to have somebody when I was a kid that I could learn from hunting big game, it would have jumped me ahead so many years. Mm-hmm. What took me to learn on my own. So I have to, you know, I see some of these young guys that had fathers and grandfathers and all that, and that are really successful. And I can relate to how they learned, you know, all these little tricks and information so quick that took me years and years to learn on my own. Yeah, and I'm just happy to pass that on to anybody I can at my age, because, you know, I've literally hunted, 54 years now, whitetails and elk and moose and everything. And to pass that on to the younger generation and inspire somebody to me is, you know, the satisfying part to me now. I get more out of that than I do killing something on my own nowadays.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'm definitely, and I would love to follow you down around for weeks.
You were like a kid. You were like a kid that morning with me.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I got a kick out of it. You were just like so excited. I love it.
I'm still over the moon that you know, like all that took place, and like I said, we walk up into that meadow. And I thought I heard a grunt. You bugled, and boom, there it was. And then, so yep. I mapped it on X from the time that he bugled and where we chased him over to the top of that ridge where we ended up harvesting him at was right. 0.7 miles.
Yeah.
That's how far he went, and we chased him.
Yeah. And that's nothing for an elk. Not right. Nothing.
Yeah, but I mean, kept him in there. He didn't. Generally, you know, he didn't want to leave the cow.
Yeah, he didn't leave. I kept him right there, but he was ready to leave. Though I could tell he was getting ready to leave.
Well, you told me. You said we got to do something, or he's going to bust out of here. Like you told me that, and that's when we started up that incline. And that's where when you got up there, I was like, "Where did he? How did he get above me? I never seen him past me." And then I'm like, "Okay, I got to catch up." So I called up. And you were talking to me, and I was like, just give me a minute. Let me catch my breath. Like that's where the elevation got me right there.
Yeah, it comes so, in. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So
you did good, though. I'll tell you right now, you did better than 90% of the guys that have ever come out there and hunted with me. Usually they give up for the first 3 days because they can't breathe.
No, I'd have went all week if I had. I mean, I was determined. I was going to do whatever it took.
Oh, you were determined, man. You were, yeah. So,
and you know something else? It was, it was funny to me. So my buddy, so I only shot one time. You know, I was using 30
right.
Six,
one shot,
one
right.
shot. My buddy went to New Mexico, and he ended up harvesting a bull. He said he shot 3 or 4 times, and then with a 300 Win Mag.
Yeah, elk die hard. They're one of the toughest animals I've ever hunted.
Yeah, and I was like, well, I must be really lucky with one shot, because, like, we would have never seen him again. When no he way. Started up that ridge, we would have never seen him again if I had to take multiple shots.
Yeah, no way. No. Yeah, you made a good shot on him. Definitely did. Yeah.
Yeah, well.
I knew when I saw that elk, when I could basically see, you know, behind his shoulder to just about his hindquarters. I could see that midsection, and I told you, I said, shoot him right there. I said, because that was boiler room. I call that boiler room. And I said, you shoot him right there. And I said, we're not going to lose him. I said, I'm a hell of a tracker. I've tracked my whole life. And I said, there's not a game animal I can't track with a blood trail. And I said, we're going to get him. And you shot him. He didn't go far. He went 100 yards.
Yeah. Well, it was dead. It was an awesome, awesome, awesome experience. And then the next day, we run around town. We did a few things. And then we went, you took me up to the lake.
Yeah, right. Fishing. Yeah, we went fishing. Yeah.
So we get up there. The very first cast, Rick catches one. He's like, these brookies, man. He's like, they're 18, 20 inches and nobody's up here. Well, I'm goofing. And it's so funny because when we walked over, I've never been there before, but when we walked over that point and I started looking at that lake, I had 2 points picked out that I wanted to fish. And when I got down there, he was like, we're going right there. We're going to fish off that point. And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly where
that's the spot, right?
Yeah. And you caught said that. First cast, you caught one. And I'm like, oh, I'm gonna get with the program.
Yeah.
And I didn't catch nothing. And we got around to that one point and you throwed it out there and you caught another one. I'm like, man, he's the dude smoking me, man. I got to catch a fish. I fish a little bit.
Yeah,
and it took me a while.
You got a couple good ones though.
Yeah, I did. It took me a while. Yeah. I'm not leaving here smoked. Like I'm not getting scooped on fishing trip.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a good lake. That's one of my favorite lakes to fish out west. Yeah, we had a good time.
No, it was beautiful. I mean, you're 10,000 feet up. You're in the wilderness. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's just It's undescribed. Like for me, being from the East Coast, Eastern, the Appalachian Mountains, which are what they are, but
right.
Being out there and being in that country. And I mean, we rode that side by side like 11 miles to even get where we could walk in there.
Right. We did. Yeah. We went from my camp's at 7,800 feet. So we went up to 10,000. We read at 10,000. Mm-hmm. It's about 11 miles in. And then we walked another mile, about a mile.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Did y'all eat those fish?
Yeah.
Did y'all eat
them? We did. Man, I tell you, them were damn good eating trout.
I bet they were. They were some nice ones.
Oh, man. They were pink. The meat was just as pink as you can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if I end up back out there, we going again.
I never had Brad Brook trout in my life.
No. They're my favorite trout. I prefer to eat a brook trout.
I mean, my mom was a phenomenal fly fisherman and brook trout fisherman, and that's all she lived for was to go brook trout fishing her whole life. We used to go to Labrador, me and mom and dad. We'd plan a trip every summer from the time I was just a kid and go to Labrador for 2 weeks, and she just loved to catch brook trout, and it was passed on to me from the time I was a kid. It's in my genes, and hopefully it'll get passed on to my grandkids. But
grandkids,
yeah, someday.
Yeah, but
yeah.
To have a good teacher, that's for sure.
Yeah,
and so well, let's hit on this real quick, and then I want to talk about your deer grunts and stuff, but. You know, you and I had this conversation kind of before the podcast, and I've kind of been posting on my social media, like the people we meet through hunting, and my world's kind of been evolved through the dogs, and I met you through dogs, and I've met so many wonderful people.
Yeah, so many
in my life.
Yeah, just outstanding people in the hunting world that I've met. My best friends. All of my best friends that are, and I call best friends. I'm talking people that you could meet like you, and not see them for 5 years, and then when you see each other again, it's like you never left off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those kind of people, and some of the best people I've ever met in my life were all either hound hunters or deer hunters or whatever. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well. It's a small world, but man, what a great community, the hunting community alone. I don't care what it is. You're right. Some of the best people in the world are
100%. I got to tell you this story. So I wrote a song. I love writing these little short songs, and I use AI to generate them, but I write all the mm-hmm. lyrics. But so in 1971, I was born in 1964, right? So when I was 7 years old in 1971, this guy named Dick Drysdale moved to Maine from Texas. And Dick was a hound hunter. And he was in the hardware store down in Oakland, Maine here, buying some. He asked my grandfather, he said, "Do you know any place to stay, any place to rent around here?" And my grandfather looked at him and he says, "Where you from?" He says, "Texas." Well, my grandfather moved to Texas in the Army. They sent him to Texas where he met my grandmother in Texas, right? Yeah, so he met my grandmother in Texas while he was in the Army. So when this guy, Dick, was in the hardware store, he says, "Where you from?" He said, "Texas." And my grandfather, of course, had a soft spot for Texas because that's where he met my grandmother, right? Mm-hmm. And he says, "Where you from?" And Dick told him the town, which was right beside San Marcos, Texas, where he met my grandmother. And he says, "Well, I got a place you can stay." He says, "You can stay in the camp next door to my house." He goes, I'll let you stay in the camp." So he come down, stayed at the camp. Well, I'd never hunted hounds in my whole life. And this guy, Dick was, I don't know, I was 7 years old. So Dick was probably 20 years old, 21 years old at the time. And he moved into my grandfather's camp next door. And come that fall, he didn't know anybody. And he coon hunted, and he had two coon hounds. He had a black and tan and a blue tick hound and named Max and Smokey. And so he asked me, he says, "You want to ride along with me coon hunting?" And I said, "Yeah, I do." And I coon hunted with that guy every single night from that night on, my entire life till I graduated high school, every single night. And we killed hundreds of coons together. And so you just never know in life who's going to inspire you and who you're going to meet and who might be the next inspiration. And so Dick stopped over to the house the other day here. He's 80 years old now, and I'll be 62 in January. So Dick's about 18 years older than me. And you know, we talked about it a little bit, about how we met and how we got started, and we've been best friends our whole life, and kind of crazy, you know?
Yeah. And Barry, I mean, like, just meeting Barry out there, and like, yeah. I mean, it was good people.
Yeah. Good people. So Barry, 20 years ago, I started excavating Barry's house lots, and he'd cut the house lots for me. He was a woodcutter. He's from Anson, Maine, and he lived out in Washington State for years out west, and he actually found Wyoming, where my camp is, and he started hunting that unit. And he kept after me for 2 years when he started cutting wood for me. He goes, "You got to come to Wyoming, Rick." He goes, I got a great place to elk hunt. He goes, "I'm telling you right now, if you went to Wyoming and hunted, you'd never go anyplace else." And I'm thinking, yeah, right. I've been everywhere. And so I ended up going hunting in Wyoming with Barry that next year. And so little behold, 5 years later, I bought a cabin right in the same unit. And I've never gone anywhere else for almost 20 years elk hunting, and it's my favorite spot I've ever been in the whole U.S. ever. And like I said, Barry's like a grandfather to me. You know, he's taught me a lot, and he's a really good friend and just a great guy. And you met Barry.
Mm-hmm.
He's a rig. He's a rig, man. So you never know what he's going to say.
No, that's right.
Yeah. He
eat all those muffins or them brownies that Nancy made and lied about it. Well, he did. He had them stuffed in his pockets and his shoes, I think.
He didn't want anybody else to eat any of them brownies. Yeah.
That's right.
He gives Toby a badge. You know, like most of the guys come to camp, he'll make them a badge. He'll cut out a piece of notebook paper and he'll give you a badge. Like if you do a good job packing out, he'll give you a packing badge. And if if you hiked in more than 15 miles one day, he'll give you a hiking badge. And if you shot an elk in one shot, he'll give you a shooting badge. So every day, you know, somebody gets a badge at camp from Barry. So
yeah.
And you never got one.
No, next year I need my shooting badge. I want my shooting badge.
That's funny.
That'll be the only time I ever shoot one time.
Yeah. I got to tell Barry about that. He'll get a kick out of it.
Yeah.
He only lives about 10 miles from me.
He told me he lived up the road. Yeah. But I mean, you know, like yeah, you're just talking about people and the people you meet and, you know, how it connects dots because this person knows this person and that person knows that person. And when it's all said and done, everybody knows everybody.
Yeah, you get that right. That's for sure. I want to bring something up real quick. And I thought of this today and it's funny we're doing this podcast tonight. So I was sitting there reminiscing on, you know, deer hunts and elk hunts and all that. And I was thinking about a deer hunt back when I was in my 40s and how I chased this buck, you know, like 18 miles one day and I finally killed him. And I chased this buck probably harder than most bucks I ever killed. And, you know, sweat was rolling off me all day long that day. I pushed this deer hard all day long and he swam a lake twice. And I went around the lake and picked his track up and I stayed on him. And I was determined to kill him. I finally killed this. He was only an 8-point buck, you know, from Maine, but he ended up weighing, I think, 231 pounds. And he was a big deer, had a big foot on him, big body deer. And I worked pretty hard. And when I killed that deer, I kind of took it for granted that day that I was going to have a lot of years like that left in my life because when you're in your 40s, time kind of stands still, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm 60 now, 61. And I think back, I was thinking about it today and I'm thinking, man, those are the best days of my life. And I took it for granted like they were going to last forever. And there's no way, I mean, I'm still in great shape for my age, but there's no way I could do today what I did then. And I'm thinking, man, those were the good old days, right?
Mm-hmm. And
so I just want to tell everybody out there, when you're in your 40s and early 50s, don't take it for granted. You want to hunt every single day that you can and enjoy and spend with family, grandfathers, dads, every single day this season that you can, because it's not going to be very long. You're going to look back and think, man, they're gone.
Well, didn't you post a story the other day that said you never know when it's going to be your last time?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did. Yeah. Yeah. At my age now, I mean, like I said, I still got a lot of years left, but I look back and I lost my grandfather. What's it been 3 years now? I lost my grandfather 3 years ago. And my dad really doesn't hunt with me anymore. Like he used to, go everywhere with me. And he was like, dad was my buddy. And I'd get on a big buck track. He'd let me out on a big buck track and he'd pick me up. I always relied on him at the end of the day. I'd be 8 to 10 miles sometimes from where he dropped me off to where he'd pick me up. I'd go over two mountains on a big buck. And I always knew somebody was there to pick me up at dark. And now I go up all by myself nowadays and I hunt. And once I get 6 or 7 miles from my truck, I have to think about who the heck's going to pick me up. There's nobody. I got to walk all the way back to that truck. So even if I hit a tote road, it might be 8 or 10 miles in the dark back to my truck. So, you know, I took it for granted those days when dad hunted with me. And I just want all you guys to know out there that be blessed that your dad hunts with you every day, because there's going to come a day when he's not there and you got to do it on your own. And then someday you're going to be the dad that follows your son around and enjoying it. And, you know, it's a cycle. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Rick, I appreciate you having me. I really appreciate you coming back on and, you know, spending time, letting me spend time with you. Like I said, I enjoyed it. I learned a lot.
We were glad to have you at camp, Heath. We had a great time. It was a good time. I can't wait to draw another tag and come back.
Hey, I'm telling you, be careful what you say, because I'm on it. I'm telling you, I'm on it.
Yeah.
Because I've always been drawn to the West. Like, I've always, every trip I've made out there, I'm like, you know, I'm kind of like you with, yeah, like the cowboy. Like, it's always been a part, you know, it's in me. It's just, you know, like we talked out there, life gets in the way. You got kids, you get stuff that goes on, work. And you're like, ah, well, that's not happening. And now I'm 50 years old, and I'm like, if I'm going to do stuff, I need to do it now, because I'm not going to have much, I'm not going to be able to do this forever.
Right. Yeah. So, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, the way it is now out West, 5 years ago, I could draw an elk tag with 1 point every single year, you know? So the first 15 years I owned my cabin in Wyoming, I drew a tag every single year with 1 point. And since COVID happened, now we're up to 5 points to draw a tag. And I mean, so me being 61 years old, I might draw two or three more tags if I'm lucky between now and 70, you know, if I get real lucky. And like at your age too, you probably won't draw another tag for 4 or 5 more years. And so it's tough. And what I'm going to do now is, you know, have my cabin in Wyoming as a base camp, because I just love it out West so much. And I'm going to put in points for every state around me, Montana, Idaho, Colorado, Utah, and Wyoming. And I'll just rotate my points. And when I draw, I'll just come to fly out, go to camp, and I'll go hunt Utah, and I'll go hunt Colorado or whatever. So, just have to adjust, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe you should do that too with me. And
I'm all about it. I've been doing some research, because I learned some, like, I didn't know about the draw and how all that stuff worked. And, you know,
yeah, a lot of people don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. The draw is pretty sophisticated. It takes a while to figure it out. And every state is totally different. So every state's got its own set of guidelines, own set of rules. And I mean, it's a process to figure the draw out in every state and to stay on top of it. And with, you got bonus points, then you got preference points in every state. So you're buying bonus points, you're buying preference points, and you got this unit and that unit. And yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I can't thank you and Nancy enough for letting me come out and stay. And like I said, I honestly hope it's many more. Like, I hope it's many more, because it was that awesome.
Yeah, good. I hope you do, man. I hope you do. Yeah, so now we're off to deer season pretty quick here. Deer season starts. We came home from Wyoming, and my wife Nancy shot a 9-point buck there that, I don't know, he probably dressed out 180 pounds. He's probably 115, 120-inch buck with a crossbow at 71 yards last week. So she was pretty excited about that. That was, the furthest shot she's ever made. And I told her, I said, well, you probably didn't get him. It was pouring rain. And so I got a video on my Facebook channel of her flying deer, and she's dancing around, hooting and hollering. So she was pretty happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah, she had pulled up out of that grass.
Yeah, she did. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Good for her. Yeah, that was great.
Oh, yeah. She's a great woman and just a great partner in life for me. We met each other, 40-something years ago now, and there was I just posted
a bear. You killed a bear.
I did. I killed a bear that day. And how many of you hunters out there happen to, would relate to this story? I killed a bear that day, and of course I was single, and I went out to a bar that night. It was a dance hall, and Nancy comes up to me and she says, aren't you that guy that killed that bear in Norwalk, Maine today in the newspaper? And I said, yeah, that was me. You know, she was all intrigued, and I'm thinking, wow, this girl likes hunting, and, you know, she's impressed. I shot a bear, and that was it. I asked her out, and we dated ever since. No, we've been married 40 years.
That's all she wrote.
Yeah. Yeah, we fish and hunt together, and she's killed elk with me, and she's killed antelope and deer, and we fish together. And so,
hey, me and her talk. We're going to do the Grand Slam.
Good. I'm glad.
With the turkeys. We're doing
it. Oh, with the turkeys. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
He loves the turkey hunt.
Yeah. We're going to do that. We got to get the Grand Slam going.
Yeah. I told you I got that piece in Kansas. Mm-hmm. You ought to come down and hunt. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to pick your brain on that.
Yeah.
Because I definitely am interested.
Maybe we'll go down there this spring, you and I, because I got that piece I leased down there. We'll go down and kill some turkeys.
Yes, absolutely. You just tell me and I'm in.
All right.
So, already... Rick, tell us about the, because you've been advertising these grunt calls. I know you and I talked about just why we got you on here. Tell us about the grunt calls and what's going on with them.
All right. So, I got a signature series grunt call, and I'll tell you a little bit about this grunt call, how it happened. I met this guy at Hunt Stock up in Massachusetts 3 years ago, and he called me over to his booth, and he says, "Hey, Rick," you know, and I'd never met him before, and he goes, "Do you ever try one of my grunt calls?" And I said, "No," and I'm thinking to myself, okay, another grunt call, you know. I literally have a box downstairs with 15 grunt calls in it that I bought over the years. And you know, I kind of, every grunt call kind of sounded, you know, a little, you know, synthetic-y or a little tinny or something. And I went over and I picked this guy's grunt call up and I grunted with it. And I looked at him and I said, "Wow." I said, "That's probably the most realistic grunt call I've ever picked up." And he says, "Well, let me tell you how I designed it." And he said, and we don't put this on social media much at all. And he said, "I stripped the windpipe out of a buck." And he said, "I counted the number of rings in that windpipe and I measured the thickness of it." And he goes, "That's how I developed the tube. And it's made out of real rubber." And I was like, "Wow." So I played with it for a while and stretched the tube and everything. And I was like, "Wow, this thing is really realistic." I said, "The most realistic grunt tube I ever picked up." So I bought one. Well, I went home, and last fall I killed 3 bucks in a 7-day period that all weighed over 200 pounds. I killed a 161-inch buck in Saskatchewan the first day I was there. I flew to Nebraska, and I killed a 203-inch giant with it the first morning I was there. Then I flew back to Maine and I killed a 140-inch 206-pound buck with it the first day I flew home. And so I killed 3 giant bucks. Then I proceeded, I hunted with some other people when I got back to Maine, and I called 5 bucks in a week with that grunt tube. So he called me up and he said, "You've had pretty good luck with that grunt tube," and he says, "Are you interested in putting your name on it?" And I said, "Absolutely." I said, "That is the best grunt tube I ever picked up." So I put my name on it. So we call it a Rick Labby Signature Series grunt call made by Nor'easter, N-O-R, Easter grunt tubes, grunt game calls. And so I promoted it, lasered my name into it, and they have been, we can't keep them in stock. I mean, I met him today and picked up another 100, and we cannot keep them in stock. We've sold 3,000 in the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. And they're going really good. So we've got a new manufacturer making the globes, the glass part of it. And we just ordered a couple thousand. So hopefully we can keep up with him now, and we got some more help hired. He does up in the shop. They're made right in USA. They're made in Carmel, Maine. And like I said, I stand behind them 100%. They are the best grunt call, I guarantee it, that you're ever going to pick up. They got a slide on it, and when you slide them all the way down, they're a mature buck grunt, really deep butt grunt. And when you slide it all the way up, you stretch the tube and you come back with it, and it sounds identical to the can. Anybody who's ever tried the can, that it sounds identical to that can. And I think they're the best grunt call ever designed. So if anybody wants one, PM me or go on nor'eastergruntcalls.com and look up Mercenary Grunt Tubes or the Rick Labby Signature Series, and you'll see them on there. And we'll have plenty in stocks start next week. This week, yeah. Actually. We just got 1,000, yeah. So...
Yeah, I think I'm gonna. I've been watching some of your stuff on them. I think I'm gonna grab me one. I've got a couple grunt calls, and I've not been very successful with them.
Well, you just send me your PM me on my Facebook there, and your address, and I'll send you one tonight.
Have you got your axle yet?
Nancy said it came in the mail, I think, today, so I haven't seen it, yep. But I think she said it came. Amen.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. That was another thing I wanted to talk about. So Heath and I are walking up this trail, and of course, I've got bad hearing in my left ear and not so great in my right ear now from shooting my entire life. I probably shot, I don't know, a million rounds since I was a kid with my grandfather and stuff shooting. Never wore hearing protection in my entire life. And we're walking up that mountain trail, and Heath looks at me and he goes, I just heard a bugle up there. And I never heard a thing. And I looked at him, I said, are you sure? And he goes, yeah, I'm positive. I said, well, let's head in there right now. And we get up there and we're halfway up the trail, and he's behind me and he goes, I just heard a grunt, Rick. So I never heard the grunt either. So I said, what are you wearing? He says, oh, these are Axel hearing aids. I said, I need a set of them, man.
Yeah.
Well, you ordered me a set, so I can't wait to try them out.
Yeah. Like I said, I sent them last week.
That was like the bionic ear. Crazy.
I mean, they do. And I'm like you. I have tinnitus really bad in my left ear. And can't hardly hear out of my right one. So, and everybody asked me about those. They're like, you know, do they do this? I was like, no, I don't. Like, I know the guys that work there, but they don't sponsor me. They're not. They're nothing.
Right.
Other than friends.
I just could not believe the stuff you were hearing that I never even heard at all. It was like naughty. Yep. I couldn't. Sometimes you hear things and you go, where'd that come from? Or what was that? Or whatever. I never heard a thing. And you looked at me and you're like, I just heard a grunt right there.
Yep.
So it was crazy.
Yeah.
I'm glad you sent me a set, because I'm going to have them in Saturday morning, opening day.
Well, man, I wish you the best of luck. And Rick, like I said, I hope this
found,
is the first.
I found a big buck. I got to tell you this story. So I was doing a job. I'm a contractor, you know, my whole life, excavation contractor. And the guy I did a job for, he called me and he goes, hey, Rick, come over and grab your check if you want to. I got your bill. I said, all right. So I said, be good to talk to him anyway. He's kind of a friend of mine. So I went over to see him, and we were shooting the breeze for a minute. And he says, you got to see this buck that I saw on Saturday. He goes, I was up north bird hunting partridge. And he goes, I videoed this buck. And he shows me this buck, and he's got double drop tines coming down. And there was, his beams are as big as my arm. I'm like, wow, that's a giant. And he kind of gives me a, you know, general location of the township it was in. And I'm thinking, yeah, that's 100 miles by 100 mile township. So we talked for a while, and I looked at him. I was getting ready to leave, and I said, are you going to go hunt that buck you showed me? He says, no, I'm not. I said, do you have an Onyx location for that? And he goes, yeah, I do. I actually marked it. I said, you want to send that to me? And yeah. He says, I'll send it to you. So I get in my truck and drive off, and pretty soon I hear ding, and I look, and he sent me the Onyx location. So I got a place I'm headed Saturday now for that big buck.
I mean, hope you get him. Can't wait to see pictures of that one.
He's a buck comparable to what I go all the way to Saskatchewan, 3,000 miles away to hunt. I mean, this is a giant for Maine. So I'm going to hunt him. He's 3 hours from my house, and I'm going to drive up there, and I found a cabin to stay overnight in from a guy I know already. So I'm going to drive up there and hunt him as much as I can. I'm only home for 2 weeks during the whole season, but if we get some snow, you know, I'm a huge buck tracker. That's what I do. I track them down, and if we get some snow, I'm pretty confident I could find his track, but it's just a matter of waiting for the snow to come right now.
Yeah, and you know what else is funny is you and I use the same rifle.
Yeah, we do. Same caliber.
Yeah, same caliber. 760, like he was talking about it coming out. I was like, yeah, that's what I grew up with. That's what I use at home.
Yeah. Yeah. They just carry so good in your hand. You know, they're so fast and so smooth, and it's just nothing better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Rick. Well, I appreciate your time this evening, and hope I didn't cut your supper too short.
Heck no, I had a great time. Looking forward to the next time we can hunt together, Heath.
Yes, I'm hoping it is the first of many. That's my hope.
Maybe we can do a hound hunt together or something. I get a lot of time. I'm hoping to retire here and at least downsize so I got more time off so I can make a trip down your way. I like traveling around. I like hunting with different people and new people, and I love hunting with hounds. I do a lot of bobcat hunting all winter, and maybe you can come up and hunt.
Yeah, I'd love to come up and cat hunt. And you got an open invitation. My house is open anytime.
Same here, buddy. Same here.
Yeah. So we'll see if we can't work it out. Like I'd love to cat hunt. You know, our season ends around Christmas.
Yeah. Our cat season in Maine actually starts at Christmas, you know. Mm-hmm. So we hunt until February 21st, the season closes. So we got a couple months.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, all right. Well, we'll keep in touch and we'll keep on that for sure.
All right. Sounds good. I appreciate you. And thanks for having me on.
No, thanks for having me at your place. Like I said, it's I can't describe it. Like it's a dream hunt that like come to reality really quick, quick.
Awesome. So everybody check out my YouTube channel, Rick Labby's East West Adventures, and appreciate everybody. And remember, shoot straight.
That's right. Catch you next time.
Okay. See you. Thanks, man.
Tailgate drops before the light. Cooler's packed and the rig's sitting right. Tracking collars charged, beeping green. Boots in the bed and the rifle's clean. Dog box rattling, engines hum. We're chasing bear till the day is done. Old Ring barking like he knows what's near. Nose to the wind, tail full of cheer. From the Virginia mountains to the Carolina clay. Burning fuel and miles each day. Every turn's another tale. Through mountain mist and paper trails, we see the sunset red in Tennessee. Rise through the fog in old WV. North Carolina's pines echo loud with the cry of a hard run hound. Chasing daylight, chasing bear. Rest stops few, the roads are long, but the fire in our hearts still burns strong. Wisconsin mornings cutting crisp and clear. Canada's wildwoods drawing near. Still got states we ain't run, but that hound dog fever won't let us quit. We see the sun. North Carolina's pines echo.
station coffee, Alpha XL on the dash. Another back road, another bear track. Friends made fast and stories told slow. Under stars where only hunters go. We see the sunrise golden Canadian air. And it sets on a trail down in Appalachia. Packing steel and leather, grit and care. We're built for the road and chasing bears. Trail ahead, we won't be late. From dawn to dusk, we're always there, chasing daylight, chasing them bears.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. Listening to this podcast? Smart move. Being financially savvy? Smart move. Another smart move? Having State Farm help you create a competitive price when you choose to bundle home and auto. Bundling, just another way to save with a personal price plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.